take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Hey, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, it is Friday, December 11th, 2020, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We're streaming live from the Idaho-Oregon border, and we've got a great show for you today. First, we'll start off with the cannabis headline news, and then we'll take a look behind the headlines where I've got a new political favorite, man. The lieutenant governor of the state of Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, looks like a professional wrestler. The guy is big. Kind of looks like me, bald guy with a gold, with a goatee, but he's 6'8", so a little bigger than I am. And we'll tell you what he's doing to stir up trouble in Pennsylvania when it comes to marijuana. And then we're going to have our activist agenda, and I'm really happy to bring onto the show a really good friend, Anthony Johnson, who's celebrating 20 years of marijuana activism. So we talked to him this afternoon and got a look at his life, what he's been, what he has done, how his activism career began, how you could get involved in activism, some of the do's and don'ts, and plenty more. So that's coming up tonight, or today, or whatever, whenever you're listening to this, in our activist agenda. We're going to do that in three parts. So the first part will be in hour one, and then we've got the two other parts coming up in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. Also, we'll have a little time for a radical rant this hour, where I'm kind of changing an opinion a little bit on the need for home grow in marijuana legalization, in that we should be fighting for it and not accepting legalization that doesn't include it. That's going to shock some of my listeners, and especially some of them in Washington State. But I'll tell you all about it. We'll explain what's going on in the radical rant at the end of the show. And then coming up in hour two, if you're listening live, we've got those other two parts of the Anthony Johnson interview. And also, we're going to take a listen to something that I found on the internet that just cracked me up. And I've got to share it with you. A little bit of right-wing metal. You got to just hear it to understand it. Also, at the end of hour two, another radical rant. I have to go off on my home state of Idaho for two stories that happened this weekend that have absolutely nothing to do with marijuana, but it's something I can't let lie. I've got to say something about it. So that's coming up at the end of hour two. And if you're an hour one podcast subscriber, a live regular listener to the free podcast, do know that we've got the hour two podcast available for my patrons at patreon.com/radicalrus. For just $4.20 a month, you get that hour two podcast. So you get to hear the rest of the Anthony Johnson interview. Also, subscribers there get the uncut interviews. So rather than being three parts with a bunch of stuff in between, you can listen to the whole 36-minute interview with Anthony Johnson all in one fell swoop. And I tell you, it's worth it, especially if you're someone who's taking on activism and you want to know more about it. This guy has passed decrim in Columbia, Missouri, marijuana legalization in Oregon, drug decrim in Oregon. We're gonna talk to him also about what he's got up on his radar next. Also, subscribers for $4.20 a month at patreon.com/radicalrus get the daily cannabis headline news. So every weekday by 9 a.m. Mountain Time, you get a little 5-minute newscast that just fits right in there with the rest of your podcast. 5 minutes to get you updated on the latest top five stories in cannabis from America and around the world. We had international stories from Mexico this week that came up in the news. So that news that you hear coming up after this break is just the Friday edition of what I do Monday through Thursday as well. Just $4.20 a month. You won't even miss it, but I tell you, it makes all the difference in the world to me. You can also subscribe at greater levels if you're doing better and can afford so, and I'll send you some free swag. It'll be really cool. So thanks for helping. Thanks for getting me back behind the mic. We got to take a break because we're doing this live. You know how we do it. When we come back, cannabis headline news. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on Radical Russ Radio.
Mm-hmm. most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.normal.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. NORML activists have helped to end the arrests of marijuana consumers since the first states decriminalized in the 1970s through the latest states to legalize this decade. Learn more about NORML at norml.org and get involved with your state or local chapter today. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis. This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalruss. With your cannabis headline news for Friday, December 11th, 2020, I'm Russ Belville. It appears this may be the year that medical marijuana arrives in the Palmetto State. Republicans in the South Carolina House and Senate have pre-filed separate bills to legalize medical marijuana, according to Marijuana Moment. The primary difference in the Senate version is the prohibition on smoking marijuana. Under the proposal, South Carolina patients would only have access to non-smokable preparations of cannabis. Five other states, Minnesota, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, have similarly restrictive medical marijuana laws. The House version would allow for possession and smoking of up to 2 ounces of flower. It also allows medical marijuana for conditions not approved by the Senate version, including chronic pain or nausea for those patients who are not homebound. The House version would also allow doctors to recommend cannabis for, quote, any debilitating condition the recommending doctor is qualified to treat, end quote. Medical marijuana must still get by Republican Governor Henry McMaster, who has vowed to veto any marijuana bill opposed by law enforcement. Should the legislative push fail, Senate sponsor Tom Davis says he will work to present the measure as a legislatively referred referendum, similar to how New Jersey presented legalization to the voters last month. Embracing marijuana legalization and other progressive policies, like increasing the minimum wage, would have helped down-ballot Democrats in the past election. Despite the landslide win by President-elect Biden, Democrats lost seats in their House majority and failed to pick off vulnerable Senate Republicans. Now, a poll commissioned by progressive groups Data for Progress, Justice Democrats, Sunrise Movement, and New Deal Strategies shows that the failure to stand up for progressive issues may have been a deciding factor. They polled voters in 13 swing districts where Democrats lost or underperformed. They found 71% of Democrats and 63% of independents, the voters Democrats need to lean their way, supported marijuana legalization. But prior to the election, moderate Democrats in those districts fought to keep the MORE Act from being voted on, fearing backlash to working on marijuana legalization while coronavirus relief remained undone. The MORE Act passed the House easily last week, and polls show even 51% of Republicans support it. Responding to requests from the lower house of its legislature, the Mexican Supreme Court has extended a deadline for marijuana legalization to April 30, 2021. In 2018, the court declared the prohibition of personal marijuana possession and cultivation to be unconstitutional and set a deadline of October 2019 for the legislature to craft legalization policies. That deadline was extended to April 2020 and again most recently to this month, reports Marijuana Moment. Legislation passed by the Senate would allow the possession of up to 1 ounce and cultivation of 6 plants, raising that limit from a previous proposal of 4 plants and removing a requirement for home grow licensing. Expungement of criminal records is also part of the bill. Move over CBD edibles, CBD tinctures, and CBD flower. There's a new use for CBD out there. CBD fruit preserver. A study released by the University of South Florida has discovered that the application of CBD to harvested strawberries, quote, inhibited yeast and mold growth on strawberries, end quote. CBD also reduced microbial load on the fruits and helped them maintain a better visual appearance. Researchers wrote, quote, CBD oil has the potential to be used by consumers at home as an effective antimicrobial treatment and to extend strawberry shelf life, end quote. 1 year into marijuana legalization, there remains zero people of color in Illinois' cannabis industry. Despite promises to provide equity in marijuana legalization to minorities disproportionately impacted by the drug war, cannabis in Illinois continues to be dominated by a small group of white-owned, financially well-backed corporations, reports the Chicago Sun-Times. Dispensaries in Illinois have sold $580 million worth of recreational marijuana over the first 11 months of the year, according to state regulators, and more than $331 million of medical marijuana. Analysts expect total sales of legal marijuana in Illinois will hit $1 billion for the full year, surpassing predictions. With your cannabis headline news for Friday, December 11th, 2020, I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis headline news is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
A substance that half Americans think should be legal and more than two-thirds say the states should be free to regulate.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Radical Russ here, inviting you to join me live every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain for Toker Talk Radio. It's talk radio by, for, and about the cannabis community. You can add your voice to the mix as well by calling my hotline at 833-RAD-RUSS and leaving me a voice message. It's Toker Talk Radio, live at 5 p.m. and available as podcast only to my VIPs at patreon.com/RadicalRuss. And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ. If fruity flavors and bright colors on marijuana edibles are marketing to the kids, how come they still allow wine coolers and fruity vodkas? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ. You're listening to Radical Russ Radio, your source for marijuana music and cannabis conversation since 2008.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our cannabis focus.
Today in the Behind the Headlines segment, I've got to take give some applause here for the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, John Fetterman. Yes. Give some praise, is the word I was looking for an op-ed that he had put forth in the Washington Post, slamming the Democratic Party for being out of touch on marijuana legalization. I got this email from the folks at Washington Post Public Relations Department pointing this out, and I took a look at the op-ed, and it's wonderful. Fetterman says, quote, "The Democratic Party's platform on weed is now officially and politically to the right of the state of South Dakota. I'm in the camp that says that if you're to the right of South Dakota on anything, you should use that as a moment to recalibrate your core values." Yeah, absolutely. South Dakota passed marijuana legalization into their constitution with a 54-46 vote, an 8-point win to amend the constitution to give people the right to possess an ounce of marijuana and to cultivate up to 3 cannabis plants. Boom. From nothing to constitutional right. So the Democratic Party, where you've got, 80% support for legalization among Democrats? And the Democratic Party can't get any farther than, maybe some decriminalization? Fetterman continues, calling marijuana legalization the most hotly discussed public policy topic, and notes how the Democratic Party's base, the strongest base of support, are the people who are disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs and the war on marijuana. Fetterman says, quote, "Democrats' historical and current platform on weed is cowardly and on the wrong side of history. We have known for decades that black and brown communities are disproportionately prosecuted and harmed, but the federal government and many states haven't done anything to stop it," end quote. And he's absolutely right. It boggles the mind that the Democratic Party can't get in front of this issue, even now when there's 15 states that have legalized. Yes, the House has passed the MORE Act, Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, that would remove marijuana from the federal schedule. So at least it's happening at the House level. And I think if it came to the Senate, it would probably get a vote if the Democrats were in charge of that. That's all going to depend on these runoff elections in Georgia, where the two Democratic senators are trying to unseat two incumbents. The president, however, President-elect Biden, has been behind on this issue. He's gotten to the point of maybe where Kevin Sabet is, that it ought to remain illegal, but maybe we decriminalize it, maybe reschedule it to Schedule 2 so that there can be some medical studies of it. Go ahead and expunge the records of people who've gotten nonviolent offenses, but we should still maintain some illegality. We should still maybe give a fine and maybe force them to go see someone like a counselor and go into a rehab and take some pee tests. That's about as far as where Joe Biden is, unless and until we the people push him to the point where he has to do it, where it's more politically bad for him not to support it. And that, again, is going to depend a lot on these two Georgia Senate elections. So Fetterman, and by the way, Fetterman's quite a iconoclast when it comes to politicians. And he's like 6'8", bald guy, big, looks like a biker or professional wrestler or something like that. Got a goatee. Very straight spoken. And lately he's been pushing the issue because he's got an office up on the second floor of the Capitol there. And outside his office window, he's been draping the rainbow flag for LGBTQ rights, right? And a potleaf flag, just a big black banner with a potleaf on it. And this has made the Republicans in the legislature really upset. Remember, Fetterman's a Democrat. The governor, I believe, is Democrat. But the legislature in Pennsylvania is Republican. So they passed this budget bill, and in the budget bill, they put into it a little rider that said no flags shall fly outside of the Capitol or on the Capitol grounds except the U.S. national flag, the Pennsylvania state flag, and the POWMIA flag, Prisoner of War Missing in Action flag, the black flag. The remembrance flag. So they put that into the state law. Like, it's against the law to fly any flag except those. So Fetterman, in response, has kept flying those flags. He has not stopped. He tweeted, quote, "It's kind of flattering that they changed Pennsylvania law just for me. Speaking of changing laws, I'll take them down when we get legal weed for Pennsylvania and equal protection under the law for the LGBTQIA plus community in Pennsylvania." So, and to this day, he's still been flying those flags. Now, I think, now I'm no lawyer, but I think constitutionally he's got a leg to stand on here. Because how could you ban all flags except the POWMIA flag? Now, I could see maybe you could say only the national and the state flag can fly. I could see that and maybe getting away with that. But once you let that POWMIA flag in, you're allowing a flag that expresses a political point of view. So if that's okay to express, then it's okay to express legalized weed or gay rights.
Fetterman explained also that in Pennsylvania and in most states, it is perfectly legal to wake up in the morning, smoke a carton of Marlboros, chug a fifth of vodka, take a pinch of Copenhagen, pop an OxyContin, and gamble away your entire life savings in a state-approved casino. But get caught with marijuana, and you're branded a criminal for life. Indeed, under current Pennsylvania law, less than 30 grams is a misdemeanor. Oh, yeah. That sound means it's 4:20 here in the Mountain Time Zone, right here on the Idaho-Oregon border. We're going to be talking a lot about Idaho today. Got a radical rant coming up at the end of hour two about that. Right now, smoke them if you got them. We'll be right back with Anthony Johnson and the Activist Agenda after these messages.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss, or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of Hour 2 of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter. And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalruss and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today. Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at the National Cannabis Industry Association. For over a decade, NCIA has fought for the improvement of regulations concerning the commercial side of medical and recreational marijuana. NCIA also works to bring together marijuana entrepreneurs for education and networking. Get involved by visiting thecannabisindustry.org. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis.
Activism begins with act. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Today's Activist Agenda is a good one, folks.
Today, our guest for our cannabis conversation is a good friend of mine and the show's. It's Anthony Johnson speaking to us from Portland, Oregon. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I am hanging in there. How about yourself, Russ?
I'm doing good. We're seeing movement in the U.S. House on the MORE Act and the Medical Marijuana Research Act. So on the activism side federally, things are looking great. And I got to say, thank you so much for your work on Measure 110 and ending or decriminalizing the personal possession of drugs here in the state of Oregon and helping people get some rehab. That's a phenomenal change in this country.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Somebody that has been in the fight against the drug war as an activist for, over 2 decades now. It is really promising to see such rapid success. And yeah, I mean, the past just month and change for the drug war and the cannabis community in general has been just really amazing. So it's I am humbled and honored to play my part in this fight. And yeah, I never, you know, when I, you know, helped start the first Students for Sensible Drug Policy chapter at the University of Missouri nearly 20 years ago. And even before that, working, you know, with the Campus Normal chapter, I never thought we'd be here by 2020. Yeah. So it's a really exciting time for us.
Yeah. A lot of people may not know that you're a Missouri native. You're born in Missouri. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was born and raised in a small town called Lexington, Missouri. It's about 50 miles away from Kansas City. And there's a famous, famous to us in the area, Civil War battle that's colloquially known as the Battle of the Hemp Bales, where the Confederate soldiers early in the Civil War overtook the Union position by dipping bales of hemp into the Missouri River and then rolling them up the hill, and the bullets couldn't penetrate and catch them on fire. And so hemp was utilized to win a Civil War battle. And, a friend and colleague of ours, longtime activist Dan Veets, as head of Missouri Normal, he actually helped facilitate the purchase of hemp at that time, not legally grown in the United States, grown in China, where Missouri Normal was the middleman, if you will, middle person, middle organization to facilitate the purchase of a bale of hemp from China for a Civil War museum in Lexington, Missouri. Yeah.
Amazing that we'd have to reach out to China to be able to get the hemp we need for a Civil War thing in America. But I'm fascinated by this because I can't imagine coming up in the late 90s, early 2000s in Missouri is the most likely place that one of America's best legalizers is going to come from. What was it like back there in Missouri as far as drug policy work? And what is it that galvanized you to take on drug policy work in a state like Missouri?
So what galvanized me was seeing my black friends on a couple of occasions, once in Lexington, or I guess better, more accurately, just outside of Lexington in a rural area. And then in the dorm rooms in Columbia, Missouri, when I was going to school, I was an undergrad at that time studying political science, and both happened while I was in college. And it was the just treatment by law enforcement of a couple of my black friends around marijuana. And at the time, I knew I was going to go to law school. I envisioned myself working at some type of general practice where I thought I would do a little bit of everything. I do a little like personal injury law or products liability, but also do some criminal defense and kind of work in a variety of areas. That's how I pictured myself practicing law, kind of working in a variety of areas. And then I was, for lack of a better term, I was radicalized by witnessing a treatment of my black friends. One in the dorm was a black friend of mine who was smoking a blunt in the dorm room, and he got arrested, handcuffed, taken to jail and sentenced in state court, where you lose your financial aid under an ounce in Missouri. The misdemeanor amount was 35 grams. But while at the same time, previously I had white friends who were caught with cannabis in the dorm. They had alcohol, they had paraphernalia, they had more cannabis, but they weren't arrested. They were just written tickets and sent to city court where they wouldn't lose their financial aid. Mm-hmm. And then another encounter I had in little Lexington, Missouri, about, now less than 5,000 people live there. One of the things we would do is just throw a gravel road party. And we were throwing a party into some, you know, out of the middle of nowhere. We thought that we were on a dead end road so that if the police came, they would come from only one direction. Well, we got some bad intel on that road.
Sounds like we didn't scout ahead.
Yeah, I relied on some bad intel. I should have scouted firsthand. So when the police roll up on us, we didn't think it would be them. but it was. Uh-huh. And so police gonna bust the party, and somebody had ditched some weed on in like his case and this like in the ditch on the side of the road, and the police are asking everybody whose it was. And my best friend he's somebody who like rarely toked actually, but since he's a black guy, they immediately suspect that he's the dealer and like throw him up against the car and just like treated him more harshly and roughly than everybody else. So those kind of two instances radicalized me. And I decided I wanted to start, concentrating on criminal defense, doing something around civil liberties and the drug war. I just started researching more of the issue. The more I learned, the more outraged I became. And University of Missouri had kind of restarted the local Missouri Normal chapter. I think it was my second year at Mizzou in 97 into 98. And Dan Veets led a meeting, and one of the leaders at the time, Amber Langston, who's a longtime activist now and friend of mine, who went on to work for SSDP and work on other campaigns with me, they held a meeting, and I just started attending meetings. We had another mutual friend start the Students for Central Drug Policy chapter at Mizzou, and I joined on as one of the early founders of that. And we did a drug war vigil on February 14th. It was Valentine's Day to commemorate and bring notice to the fact that we had 2 million like nonviolent drug offenders in prison in the United States. And we had advertised this drug war vigil, and it's freezing cold, and we hold it. And after spending like a month of trying to get people to go to this thing, about, like six people showed up. And so I'm disheartened by the lack of attendance, but I was encouraged by everybody honking and showing support as they drove by. And so at that moment, it struck me that we really had a lot more support than you think, just that people really aren't willing to kind of be public or show their face or stand out in the cold, particularly in a prohibition place where, one speck of marijuana can get you arrested and on the books is a year in jail, and, you can lose your financial aid and job opportunities. So people weren't willing to do that. So it just struck me as like, hey, we ought to write an initiative to change the law. And luckily for us, Columbia, Missouri has a local initiative law. We're able to put a measure on the ballot to decriminalize personal amounts and actually completely remove the criminal penalties for possession of a medical amount if you had a doctor's recommendation. And we got on the ballot in 2003 in a special election, got trounced about 57% to 43%. But undeterred, got right back on the ballot in 2004, a year later, added a zero to the fine. So instead of a $25 fine for possession of less than 35 grams, we made it a $250 fine, but no jail time, no arrest. We mandated that the city prosecutor and police had to keep the case in city court and couldn't send people to state court. And we kept the medical provision exactly the same. And the decrim provision passed with over 60% of the vote. Wow. And the medical provision passed with over 69% of the vote just a year later. And yeah, and my future wife, Sarah Duff at the time, and Amber and our friend Amy Fritz and Amanda Bros, these other people that put in so much work, they're really good at gathering signatures and putting this measure on the ballot. It was not that great of a signature gatherer. I took a little more personal when people would say mean things to you, gathering signatures and things like that. And also when you're like tabling, when you're tabling at an event, you're just kind of like a sitting duck at your table for whoever wants to talk to you. And so other people who are, nicer, more compassionate, better listeners than me can kind of put up with that. I wasn't great about it.
There's a reason I'm behind a microphone, Anthony.
But thanks to the work of a lot of people, it was a great time in Missouri. Actually, it was a time where, even though it was scary because it was a prohibitionary place, and you would hear a lot of mean comments. You would get so many people that came out of the woodwork to support you. And I want that to be known to be a good lesson for every burgeoning activist, no matter where you're working, no matter how dire it seems. You know, if you would have told me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that Mississippi and South Dakota were going to pass reform measures, you know, statewide, I'm not certain I would have believed it. And also not to be deterred when, if you suffer a loss, you know, so my very first initiative I worked on, put my heart and soul into, suffered a loss, but stayed with it and had, you know, had another, my first time I was a chief petitioner in Oregon for a statewide measure to legalize medical dispensaries was a loss in 2010. But we came back and legalized it, you know, dispensaries through the legislature with the work of a lot of great people. And I've had a couple more major wins since then. So even in losses, you bring the issue to the forefront and you learn a lot. You learn the arguments that opponents are going to use. You bring out more allies. And really the main thing is just getting people talking, because anything we know about cannabis, and I would say the drugs in general, the truth is on our side. And so the more that people are talking about the issue, the more that people are learning about the issue, we just win over time, person by person.
Yeah, it's interesting, like you mentioned, what you learn in a loss. Like, you probably could have never forecasted that it was just a matter of a tenfold increase in a fine that would make the difference in people's support for decriminalization in Columbia, Missouri. That it's like, what, $25? By God, that's not enough. Got to bump that to $250. So now you've been a part of these municipal measures in Columbia, statewide, the Measure 74 campaign, that was the dispensary campaign, the Measure 91 campaign for legalization in 2014, and most recently, Measure 110 in Oregon for drug decriminalization. Where are your sights set now? Do you expand beyond the drug policy realm, perhaps into other areas of personal liberty, like decriminalizing sex work, or are there other battles you're looking to fight in the realm of drugs and marijuana?
So all the above as far as civil liberties go, the drug war. I would love to continue to help in states that are still prohibition states. I know a place near and dear to you is Idaho.
That's right.
I would love to see move forward in Idaho. I had the honor of helping draft the kind of first pieces of legislation that became the medical marijuana measure that passed successfully in Missouri. I had the honor of doing some work and helping some activists in Kansas City, Missouri, pass a local decriminalization measure in Kansas City, Missouri as well. I've had folks reach out to me and a few other states about some drug war decriminalization measures. And so I am available to counsel, help anybody that wants to move this issue forward and share what I've learned and to provide some guidance that I can give. And as far as decriminalizing sex work, I think that is something that needs to be done. A big goal of mine, I would say, is ending the over incarceration issue, over law enforcement issue that we have in this nation for virtually all victimless crimes, I would say, and most nonviolent crimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely also doing some research. It's a little complicated when you deal with union contracts and the interplay between that and various laws in the Constitution, but I'm also looking and doing some preliminary research on potential police accountability, what can be done with local initiatives as far as the Portland Police Bureau goes and other localities. And so I am always looking for the next fight for freedom, and got a couple of projects in the work. And I would love to come on over time and divulge more as they move forward.
We'll continue our discussion with Anthony Johnson, his history, 20 years in marijuana legalization and now drug decriminalization. in the state of Oregon. Take a look back at his roots in Missouri again. And in hour two, as we talk to him, we cover the issues of social equity and home growth in both medical and recreational marijuana legalization initiatives. And speaking of home grow, that's the subject of my radical rant that's coming up next here on the Russ Belleville Show on Radical Russ Radio. Coffee Pod in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with a selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent you. The Storyteller Kitty Time podcast is now replaying on Radical Russ Radio. Join host Lisa Kunze and the Normal Show Live alumni for weekly takes from Colorado's Rocky Mountain High. Visit the Radical Russ schedule page for download links, and don't forget to do your homework.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theater, I'm Leonard Pinthgarnell III. Tonight, we bring you another classic of the cannabis cinema as interpreted by the Royal Cannabis Shakespearean Theater Company, 1995's Friday. In this scene, Smokey, played by Chris Tucker, and Craig, played by Ice Cube, are sitting on their stoop, enjoying a cannabis cigarette when they are approached by Felicia, a vagrant consumed by an addiction to cocaine. Enjoy!
What doth thee wanteth?
Oh, verily, I require loan of thine carriage?
What kind of horror is yond? Sugar wouldst be a common request. Ketchup, perhaps. Thou requesteth mine carriage? Hell nay! Be gone with thou!
Prithee, sir, bequeath me a reefer?
Thou needest to bequeath employment with thine destitute buttocks. Always one finds thou in theft of other's stash. Be gone with thou, Felicia!
Forever shall I recall that.
Recall it, transcribe it, paint it. I have nary a fuck to give.
Craig?
Be gone, Felicia.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theater, I'm Leonard Pinthgarnell III.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Well, a lot of the debate in the cannabis space these days is focused on repairing the damages from the war on drugs to communities of color. And without these so-called equity provisions in the commercial laws for legal cannabis, we see some activist groups on the left lobbying to block the passage of marijuana reform bills. We saw this happen in New York State. But these same groups seem pretty eager to pass these legalization measures focused on equity that ignore the greatest mechanism for equity: the right for marijuana consumers to grow their own cannabis plants. And it's become increasingly obvious to me that that right to cultivate cannabis now must be legalization's deal breaker. Now, this
epiphany happened during my research on a question that was posed by my friend, Greg DeHote. He's an activist in London with the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. And he tweeted to me. We were going through a Twitter discussion and the question came across. He says, can you tell me how many states in the U.S. legalized for medical marijuana and then added on the right for patients to grow their own afterwards? That is, of all the medical marijuana states, did they start with home grow or did they end up getting home grow later? Right. How many states got home grow later? Now, immediately, my mind conjured up what I thought the answer was. And I was pretty close to right. But I decided I had to look it up. You know me, I look shit up. So, the first states, that's easy. When medical marijuana started in 1996 in California with Proposition 215, all the way through Michigan in 2008, so your first dozen years of medical marijuana, we got 13 medical marijuana states. Every single one of them contained the right to home grow in one way or another. Different levels, different amounts, different numbers of mature plants, etc. But all 13 went 13-0, and that included states that passed it legislatively, like Hawaii. But by 2010, there's a distinct change. By 2010, we started to see the retail dispensary operations that were kind of operating in a gray market, a gray area of the law with reimbursements to caregivers, wink, wink kind of stuff going on. It started creeping. Yeah, we could even post it further back to 2008, 2007, as you get the, you know, California and such. I saw it happening up here in Oregon around 2008 or 9. Once those retail marijuana dispensary operations started gaining some legitimacy and some laws started getting changed to make them legal, as these markets start emerging, you see the change in the medical marijuana laws. As the push for medical marijuana had already picked off the low-hanging fruit of Western states that have initiatives. You can put it on the ballot. The people can vote for the home grow initiative. But after those low-hanging fruit were kind of gone, you're left with these proposals that are having to go through legislators or more conservative states. They started restricting and then later eliminating any right of patients to cultivate their own medicine. In exchange, you got these highly regulated, taxed and state-licensed dispensaries and seed-to-sale tracking and limited number of grow ops and expensive medicine for patients when they can get it at all. It started with 2010. You had Arizona, right? So Arizona had home grow, except they put in their initiative this requirement that if you were going to grow your own at home, you had to live more than 25 miles away from a dispensary. Well, where do you think dispensaries end up being located? In cities. And so anybody who lived within a city or within 25 miles of a city couldn't grow their own. Well, eventually, actually rather quickly, there were enough dispensaries in all the major metro areas that the only place you could really live in Arizona and home grow your own was Tuba City. Look it up. Tuba City, Arizona. There was a map I found at one point in my research that showed that 93%, basically 93% of Arizona's population were within these little 25-mile halos that couldn't home grow. And back in 2010 when I was covering this, and I've got the audio somewhere in my archives, you had a guy from Marijuana Policy Project. I questioned him on this. I said, "Why? What's this home growth? Why do you have this home grow halo? What's the deal?" And they said, "The home grow halo was necessary to ensure that there'd be a viable market for the dispensaries. We nixed the right of patients to be able to cultivate their own cannabis medicine in favor of the marketplace," which, like, oh goodness, I'm sure they needed the help because it's so difficult to sell cannabis. Yeah, you got to have some training wheels for that market, for sure. So that was the first instance where at least it was, you know, it wasn't a complete prohibition, but effectively it was for most people on homegrown cannabis. And since then, of the other 22 states and D.C. that have added medical marijuana laws to their books, only five have allowed all patients to grow their own cannabis. D.C., Illinois, Massachusetts, Missouri, and Oklahoma. And note, Missouri, Oklahoma, Massachusetts, D.C., initiative states. Illinois is the only one that did it legislatively that allowed people to grow their own. So now, out of the 37 medical marijuana states, or however many, the majority of them don't let you home grow. Of the remaining 18 states with medical marijuana laws, five don't even allow patients to use plant cannabis, much less cultivate it. That's Minnesota, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia only allow certain non-smokable forms, oils or tinctures or patches or extracts or concentrates or in some cases flower, but you have to vaporize it, right? Because they're going to, you know, break down your door to see whether or not you put a Bic lighter to it in a Coke can or something. I don't know. But basically the idea of the law is you're not supposed to smoke that weed, which always struck me as odd when, oh no, you don't want me to smoke the 20% flower, so I'm going to go over here and vaporize this 75% concentrate, right? It doesn't make sense from their point of view, but all right, whatever. So strike those five from the 18. Now we're left with 13 states, including the new medical marijuana state of Mississippi, that do not include home grow rights for patients in their original laws or restricted them to some patients. Like the newly passed South Dakota one has like a halo thing going on with it too. And none of those 13 states have updated their laws since to add home grow. Unless you count legalization for recreational use. Patients in Arizona, remember them? Living in the 25-mile halos? Anybody in Phoenix or Scottsdale or Tempe or Flagstaff? Flagstaff? Anybody in those 25-mile halos, 93% of the population, well, now they can cultivate cannabis under the state's newly passed recreational marijuana legalization. South Dakota also passed a recreational marijuana legalization at the same time as their medical. The medical that had limits on who could home grow, but the recreational lets everybody home grow. They can cultivate up to 3 cannabis plants starting in July. So medical marijuana without home grow hasn't provided them any home grow since then. But legalization in some of these no home grow medical marijuana states, a couple of them there, has added rights to home grow. But then again, when it comes to legalization, we have only to look at Washington State, which passed legalization in 2012. And I tell you, it was a heated battle here in the Pacific Northwest, and I was deep in the thick of it with my Stoners Against Legalization campaign, arguing that you can't vote against legalization. This would be historic. The first state ever to legalize. We can get home grow later. We'll be legal then. Then we can argue for home grow. And I have to concede that those activists who opposed Initiative 502, they opposed it on two grounds. One was that it didn't have home grow and we would be unlikely to get it later. And two, it had the per se DUID thing. Now, on the per se DUID thing, we have not seen the disaster that was predicted on that. So we're going to push that aside for the moment. But on the home grow thing, I got to concede they were right. Home grow has not come to Washington State, and there's been a few tries to do it. But once there's an entrenched industry that depends on people coming to their dispensaries, they're not going to pony up and make any sort of push for home grow. And some of them are going to make a push against it. Law enforcement that still gets to bust people whenever there's a tip about a plant, they're not up for doing anything about it. Some people within the community who are on the medical side of things and get the special exemption to be able to home grow if they're medical, which provides some scarcity that keeps prices a little higher, they're not interested in extending that privilege to everyone in some cases. So it becomes a much thornier sort of political puzzle to solve once you've got legalization, once you've got an industry and you've got retail access. Because remember, most pot smokers do not grow. Very few of them grow. Most do not. So politically speaking, where is your well of support? So this is something now I will not concede that it was wrong to vote against I-502. Won't concede that. Context matters. There had been no legal states. There had already been a defeat in California in 2010. There were three states going for it in 2012, but few had any hopes for Oregon's. So it was all on Washington and Colorado. And hindsight's 2020, seeing that they passed with 55%, but at the time it was no consideration that they were any sort of sure thing. And the thought that maybe only one would pass if we defeated Washington brought up the concerns that the cheese stands alone and it would have all this federal scrutiny and that there might be an easier push to be able to blockade it or shut it down or consider it a fluke if it was just one state. So I'm not going to concede voting yes on I-502, but now in the context of what we know now, 8 years later on I-502, 10 years later on some of these medical marijuana states and throughout a decade, and only seeing 5 out of 24 states since 2010 come forth with medical marijuana that had a home grow provision and only one of those legislatively, it's time now for us to put our foot down and start demanding the right to home grow. Because home grow is the ultimate social equity. The die has been cast. The social equity folks on the left of the marijuana debate who are fighting for some racial justice in the way marijuana proceeds have distributed, they've put their marker down. They've said, hey, if it doesn't include social equity, we'll bomb this legalization push. We'll pull our support. Maybe it's time we do that too for home grow as consumers and as growers. Because now it's not 2012. Now we got 15 legal states. And now we're seeing the first of them, New Jersey, coming along saying there's not going to be home grow after having the first one, Washington State, not having that. No, it's time for us to make that our deal breaker, that there must be home grow in any legalization we're going to fight for. And it's always disturbed me that if you're fighting for social equity, if you want to make sure that the cannabis industry is responsive to the needs of the consumer, especially when it comes to repairing damages for communities of color, then not having home grow is counter to your goals. Home grow is the only means by which the taxed and regulated marijuana industry can be held to account by consumers. If they don't provide what we want at the prices we want and behave in the ways we want, then we turn to our guy, the guy. We know the guy. The disturbing paradox to me about this is in calling for social equity, you know, proposing to bail out communities by having high taxes on who? Pot smokers? We are not the ones that caused that problem. It was the taxpayers in general through their funding of the police and the electing of the politicians who did this, not the pot smokers who were actually helping those communities by buying the weed. And now we have to pay the higher tax. Now, if we have a robust right to home grow, that forces the marijuana industry players to keep their margins and profits lower than a state that allows them to just control the whole thing top to bottom. We need the right to grow. Can't believe I have to say it. But these days, if your proposal doesn't include home grow, I'm going to have to be a stoner against legalization. My, how things change. But really, how can you be a criminal for cultivating something that's legal to purchase and own? Like, I can make my own homemade gun, build my own flamethrower, create chlorine gas, in some exceptions. You can't do that in Maryland. Flamethrower. That's all the time we got. But stay tuned for hour two. We got the other two parts of the Anthony Johnson interview coming up. Plus my rant on terrible news from Idaho. For everyone here, Idaho and Border, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.